Oh, my name is Joe Watkins.
And yes, today is March
31st,
1984.
Yeah, and it's approximately 4:45 on the West Coast in Vancouver.
What about you, Neil?
My name is Neil Faulkner.
When do you tell both of you your academic history, starting from kindergarten or something like that, from elementary school? Where have you been educated? What place?
I grew up in a little hill community in the northeast corner of Tennessee. So I lived in a side of a hill that was at about 600 meters.
And what kind of school was this? You went to this school at what age? 5, 6?
Yeah, 5 or 6.
And you were interested at that time in mathematics?
Well, it was my favorite subject, yes. My mother, as I told you, my mother used to buy me books and I would work them at home. And so, in fact, I still have a strong memory of how I could do long division because I couldn't multiply at such a young age. So I would write the number you would need in the left-hand side and the number I wanted to divide it into in the right-hand side. I couldn't multiply, so if the number was, say, 32, I would write underneath it 64, 96, and its multiples down to 9, and do a little comparison until I could divide. So that was how I divided age 6, because I couldn't multiply. So, yeah, that was the reason I liked dividing when I was age 7.
But what do you remember about your elementary school? Because it is interesting, of course, for me to compare school education in different countries. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess what I most remember about it is there were about a fourth of the people who I lived with, and I was a member of this group, who had the benefits of being in the upper middle class and having parents who were educated. And three-fourths of the students didn't have that at all. They lived in a poverty that you wouldn't expect in the United States. Their parents had perhaps 7 or 8 children and made $2,000 a year. So maybe they lived in a barn nearby somebody's house because those people were just kind enough to lend them that building because it wasn't used. So for those three-fourths of the people, it was everything the teacher could do to get them to even consider education as something that was interesting to do. Whereas for the other fourth of us, it was a natural thing. You read books at home, and you were exposed to music at home.
And, what about your elementary school? What kind of place was this? What kind of school was this? What kind of pupils?
Well, it was in a small town in Saskatchewan called Kipling, Saskatchewan.
Kipling on a British writer?
Yeah. About 800 people lived there. And the first year I went to school, I was in a one-room schoolhouse. But that wasn't the only school in town. It was just the place where they put the grade one students. And I liked school, but I didn't actually learn to read in grade one. Apparently, a lot of the students in that class didn't learn to read. According to my mother, it was something to do with the teacher we had, although we all liked her very much. But then that summer, the following summer, I learned to read from comic books, so I caught up.
I see.
And then in grade two, we moved into the big schoolhouse with lots of rooms.
And this one-room school, or how it is called, how many pupils were there?
Well, maybe 30 or so.
And just 30. One teacher?
Yes.
And what about discipline and order? Was it all right?
I'm sorry?
Order in the school. These 30 young children.
Yes, we were
did behave.
Yes. Perhaps half of them came from out in the country. They were children of farmers. A lot of the people who lived in and around that town originally came from Hungary, so some of them also spoke Hungarian.
Okay, and in your elementary school, did exist any problems with the discipline of pupils?
Oh, I would say for the most part, no. There, in grade 6 and 7, there was the problem that some of the students who had such trouble being educated were held back. And there's a discipline problem if many of the students are 12 and a few of the students are 16, because they just, they're not interested in being educated. So that is a problem for the teacher and for the students.
Have they bullies?
Yeah. And they also have the opportunity, it's unusual for a sixth grader to have the opportunity to drive an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, and they have no interest in learning. And
were your teacher at a later stage adequate or not in schooling?
They did the best they could, I think. I think they were honestly trying. I think that was always true, every teacher I had. But they went to the local college, and the local college really wasn't prepared to teach them, to train these teachers to teach things or to handle difficult teaching methods. It was, they didn't spend so much per pupil. It was clear.
But your teachers knew
well. On the whole, I thought they were quite good. When I started getting very interested in sciences and in mathematics in high school, I learned enough that I was able to recognize that maybe one or two of my teachers didn't know their stuff as well as they should have. But on the whole, I was looking back, I'd say I was really quite impressed with the quality of the teaching. That might have been a function of the school that I was going to. This would have been in Winnipeg, and it was quite a good school. So that may have been the reason. I don't know how they were in other schools or in schools in high schools in small towns out in the country, for example.
But what is the school system here in Canada? Is this approximately the same as in the United States? Curriculum and say in the United States at some stage, I think students could choose what to learn and what not to learn, and there is this very little compulsory material. So at least we read this in newspapers. It is possible to graduate from the high school without being able to read.
Perhaps it's an
No, it's quite well-known situation. Actually, newspapers, media report that a substantial percentage of American army people are not able to read. Yeah. So they use some kind of comics instead of instructions for weapons.
It was Neil's method.
When I was in just out of grade one, but I didn't go into the army then.
But you had a similar situation with your skin.
There was no any student with any special learning problems, or any specially gifted student wasn't in a position to receive any special attention.
No, but I'm asking if there existed some compulsory requirements.
Yeah. I would say we were all together. There was, because there's not a lot of money, there's not a lot of choice in courses.
Uh-huh.
So it was
impossible to replace all mathematics. I was told that it is possible to graduate from the high school in the United States having just 1 year of mathematics.
That's true in Ohio. It's one of the problems we have in Ohio. We're obliged to accept at Ohio State University any student who graduates from high school in Ohio, provided there's room. We can't wait. We have to take them when they apply, if there's room. We can't wait till we get all the applications and then take the best ones. So, and they can graduate from high school for the 4 years of high school, having taken only 1 year of mathematics. Now, recently we've started to require that if they're going to go into science, that they have at least 2 years of mathematics. We're allowed to state such requirements, but we have to admit them to the university if they graduated.
Yes, so this is different in Canada, or? similar.
In Canada, most universities, as far as I know, are allowed to admit whichever students they choose to admit.
But what about schools? Is it possible also to graduate from a high school having just 1 year of mathematics?
Not from the one I went to, but that would have been in the late 60s.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the situation
is
now.
I see. So you think that it is in process of change now?
It may be. When I was there...
You have no personal contacts with schools, brothers, sisters, somebody else, I don't know.
Well, part of the trouble is that I have been out of the country most of the time since 1978.
I don't know. What about, you have mentioned some influence of parents. Did exist some close contact between teachers and parents?
Yeah, but my teachers generally viewed me as being cantankerous. Because I would ask them embarrassing questions or call them down for things they wouldn't know. So when my parents met them, they would always be filled with complaints about my commentary in class. And my parents would tell me what they said, and then they would more or less say, don't worry about it. If they say foolish things in class and it bothers you, then you probably should say something. Mm-hmm. So that was...
I see. So you were not scolded for your curiosity by your parents?
No.
Any way to know every week about the marks of the student, his behavior
week.
Or misbehavior and so on?
No, I don't think so.
On a systematic basis. And
often if we had any exam, we would be asked to take it home and have our parents sign the bottom of the exam and return it.
I see. We would do that with our report cards.
But
this was Christmas and in June, I think.
Twice a year.
Yeah,
we did that
three times.
Six
perhaps
times a year.
Easter, I don't remember exactly.
In the Soviet Union, they have the so-called diaries.
Yeah.
And in this diary, every week, first of all grades are reported every day there, and all comments about behavior and so on, and every week parents are supposed to sign this. Mm-hmm. Also, there exists, I think, at least once every 2 months, general session meeting of all parents.
Thank goodness we don't have to give grades to our students in university every day.
So this is similar or not similar?
Well, I would say if it was a major examination, I would bring it home to my parents. And when I was younger, I would be asked to have it signed and brought back. And every 6 weeks we had our grades reported.
But not in your school.
Not as I recall. It was less frequent. But there were contacts from time to time, and they would have parent-teacher association meetings, so the parents would come and they could talk to the teachers. Or there'd be special days for those parents to meet the particular teacher of their children and so on.
Various ways. I mean, I would say that the teacher would just adopt whatever method was most effective.
But then these are traditional methods.
Well, the traditional method could be, in some sense, corporeal. You could hit the student, or send them...
You permit it? I think that this depends on the place.
Yeah.
It used to be permitted, but in my personal case, my parents personally asked the teachers, the teachers that they were the ones who did the physical punishment for their child, and that the teachers needn't bother.
But there existed no regulations against.
No, I would say absolutely not. I would say students were hit on, not severely, and on a regular basis. And the teachers would always have another teacher or another two teachers come out and witness the event to... To make sure so that the teachers could say that the student wasn't really overly punished. Yes.
And in what grades this was common?
Oh, I would say after grade 7, it was extremely uncommon.
And in Canada?
Well, from time to time, in elementary school, maybe up to grade 3 or 4 at the most, I would say the teacher would hit a student. But most of the time, just some sharp words would do. Only in a very extreme case would you actually send a student to the principal, and they would have to really do something bad for the parent to receive a report about misbehavior in class. I mean, you would get in touch with the parent if the student was a perennial problem, something like that.
But what about the principal? What he would do?
Well, if you were sent to the principal's office, it was usually to get the strap, which was a formal form of corporal punishment, where you had to put out your hand and then they would administer 10 whacks with a leather strap or something like that.
Similar to...
No, we didn't have this.
This is more this British tradition.
Extremely.
I think that in... I don't know about the present time, but anyway, yeah. People of your generation told that such form of corporal punishment was just a part of tradition, and British maintain tradition.
Most of us were scared stiff of the possibility of this. It really kept us in line. I would say probably the majority of students never suffered this form of punishment. But maybe the occasional slap from the teacher in class, but without any other teachers coming in to witness it.
Yes, I was told that the main part was not physical pain, which anyway was very short and not so severe, but psychological. Because in Britain they just tell a boy, come to my office, say, I don't know, at the end of the week or something like that. So all the week he is...
That's even worse.
some suspense.
There were a few occasions I recall when the student would stand up to the teacher and we knew the student was right. The student would receive the punishment and he would return to the classroom to wild applause.
So punishment, but this punishment was not performed in front of the class?
Never.
And not by the principal?
Very rarely. Sometimes the principal would witness it.
But this was something formal or informal? Because, you know, in family, for example, it is quite common that a child will get a spank or a slap just passing.
It's somewhat formalized, you know. We will go out in the hall. Because you go out in the hall, the teacher accrues the witnessing teachers so that immediately all the other students who have these teachers know that somebody is in the hall being punished. You can hear the licks being performed up and down the hallway. They reverberate. So somebody knows something has happened. And the children will all know who the punished person was within the hour.
And were they sympathetic to the victim? Or?
I would say typically they were typically sympathetic to the victim, unless it was, you know, somebody who was a bully and you had received personal harm from him, then you weren't so unhappy, but generally speaking, the victim.
What about lions? I was told about this form of school punishment. Do you know lions? To ride something?
Oh, yes. That was, that was how I learned to spell. The teacher I had in grade 5 and 6, whenever he would come into the room after a short absence and find the whole class talking, would assign us to write out perhaps 10 weeks of spelling lessons. So I can spell pretty well, thanks to that.
Only one time I had to do this in the second grade, and I had the misfortune of some child telling me a joke while I was drinking my milk, and I dropped the milk all over the place, through my nose, and the teacher was upset with me for doing this, and I apologized to her profusely and explained to her that I had done my best, and then she insisted that this was a punishable act, so I was forced to stay after school for an hour and write on the blackboard. I can't recall what phrase she asked me to write apropos this incident, but I wrote it some hundreds of times on the blackboard.
So this is a common...
I think these were old teachers who did this. So it was coming out of fashion for me, even in the early 60s.
To what college?
Went to the University of Tennessee. which was a dream come true for me almost, because the teachers there were at that time the most educated people I'd seen, and they were good scholars. I mean, my history professor was a good scholar in Renaissance history and medieval history, and taught a good course in Western civilization. And my Russian teacher was one of the world's experts on Babel. That was fun, and I had an active geometric topologist for.
So it was a great contrast.
Yes, tremendous. There were people of the world too, which was different.
And at your university?
Well, I don't think I was aware of the sort of details that you were mentioning when I started in college. When I went to university, I was interested mainly in math and physics, I guess. And I couldn't quite make up my mind which to study. I liked them both very much.
But you have not this general education for 2 years, then you're more or less forbidden to do what you are interested in.
Well, for 1 year, yes. So I did have a general education in the first year. And then I had to decide what to do in second year, and I went into physics. But I was more interested in theoretical physics than experimental physics. And I decided that I couldn't take enough math courses if I stayed in the physics program, because they insisted that I take a certain number of physics courses that left me with too little time to take math courses. So I switched into math, planning to come back to physics, but I never did. I stayed in math.
At this period of time, have you lived with your parents or you moved to
At that time, I was living with my parents. Yeah.
Which is very uncommon in the United States, I think.
What about you?
No, my father was pleased to say that he was to try to teach me for 18 years. Now that I was 18, I was to teach myself.
What did your father do?
He's a chemical engineer.
I see.
So he said, you know, you go. He said it's time for you to go away.
Yes, that's common in the United States, but not as common in Canada, I think.
Well, it probably not. But in my case, I wasn't really in a position to move away from home because my parents were separated, and we weren't getting much money from my father. So my mother had to support the four children, and she was a public health nurse. She earned enough money to support us, but not enough to send us away to school. So I pretty well had to stay home.
And your brothers and sisters were older or younger than you?
I'm the oldest. One of my sisters did a bachelor's degree in sociology, but my other sister dropped out of university after a year or two, and my brother hasn't come to university.
Even now, I do not understand quite well how the system works. Has any young person who deserves adequate support to make possible for him to get adequate higher education in America or not?
Well, I won a couple of scholarships to put me through university. I was only able to accept one of them because each one had limits on how much other money you could accept. But so as far as covering my tuition fees were concerned, there was no problem. That was taken care of for the 4 years of my bachelor's degree. But it didn't give me enough money to live away from home.
So had you lived other than in Winnipeg, it would have been a big problem.
Yeah. I would have had to find a job that paid well in the summertime.
But you know not only your own experience, you know, say, people of your schoolmates and so on. So you have some idea if this system works satisfactorily or not, or people are lost because of economic problems for higher education. Of course, I'm not sure that everybody should get higher education. I'm not even sure that everybody must get go through the high school. Sometimes this is done under pressure and but in all cases where a person is willing and capable and able to learn.
Well,
so,
I
do you know any counterexamples?
It wasn't actually among my friends. I don't, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I think that anyone who is a good enough student that it's clear that it would be a real loss if they didn't go to university can get enough money to go.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people who are sort of, you know, kind of B students, and whether they will get enough money to go or not, that's a more doubtful question. That depends a lot more on whether or not their families have enough money to send them, I think. Although there is a system of bursaries for students whose families don't have enough money to send them to university. So, say a B student who's capable of going on getting B's can go to university.
What about tenure? How easy to get it?
I just noticed that in this early story I was telling, this in the early 70s, you could find out that a person was denied tenure at a state university. They might teach at a small college, which wasn't very exciting. And that was their fate. Their fate was to receive, in that time, $15,000 to teach calculus four times. Not such a very good fate, but now any person who can write a Fortran program can make 50% more than that and have no real trouble with job security. The job is not very difficult compared to doing mathematics. So they do that, so they... They're much better position to do that than to do this work in colleges. I think colleges now are in a desperate situation to try to find people who teach.
So the situation for teachers is better.
The situation, in some senses, the teachers are better because any time a skill has a similar position in the free marketplace, then the position improves for teachers. An example is they pay statisticians here more than mathematicians, although. In some abstract sense, mathematicians are considered to be, is considered a more difficult discipline, has a higher prestige, but the marketplace demands statisticians more, so they're paid more.
Well,